From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, messages from the other side. Here's what's happening. Whoa, what a wild ride for Bitcoin. Even by Bitcoin standards, Thursday was unbelievable. With a few hours, the volatile digital currency surged above 19,000, dropping back then below 16,000, and then seesawed before settling up above 17,000 late Thursday. Right now, on the Asian markets, it's down to $15,431. The wild swings happened just days before trading in Bitcoin futures begins on a major U.S. exchange. Some banks are saying they're not going to sell it to their clients. Hackers, by the way, have carried out a heist on a leading digital currency platform, making off with an unspecified amount of bitcoins, maybe millions of dollars stolen. NiceHash, which describes itself as the largest marketplace for mining digital currencies, said that as of late Wednesday, it was suspending its operations for at least a day because of a security breach. The site's payment system was compromised, and the contents of the Bitcoin account have been stolen. That's what I don't like about Bitcoins. It's just gone like that. In Aztec, New Mexico, a shooting at a high school in a small New Mexico town left two students and the suspect dead, according to authorities, as the school throughout the area remained on lockdown as a precaution. State police not releasing much. The school of about 900 students cordoned off. Sad story there. And a bill to allow gun owners with concealed carry permits in one state to legally carry their weapons in other states overwhelmingly passed the U.S. House of Representatives. We'll keep our eyes on that one. Going crazy in Southern California. The relentless wind-whipped wildfires raging Southern California are expected to worsen as dangerous winds are forecast to fan those flames in different directions and force more evacuations from a region where more than 200,000 people have already fled. Very close to where I go when I'm in Los Angeles. Meteorologist Scott Stevens with us. Scott, how did this all happen? How did this start?
Oh, my goodness, George. It really began last winter with all of the rains and an absence of fires in a lot of places over the previous couple of decades. So there's been a buildup of combustible materials. But the big thing is that when we begin to see the fall rain showing up in October and then kind of escalating through November and December, simply have not materialized. There's not even a single drop of rain. Where I am in Southern Colorado, almost nothing since the very end of September.
Strange.
So now, there are mountains that are bare and dry, and long-range models, I see nothing till at least Christmas.
These Santa Ana winds don't help either, do they?
No, and I think we've got about 3 days where we have elevated risk of seeing those winds come up. They're expected to be stronger today than they materialized. And we run those elevated risks until about Monday, and then that kind of relaxes. That may not be enough of a window because the humidity levels have got to come up, and we have to completely remobilize this firefighting force because in December, they're doing other things. These firemen have got other jobs.
They do. They're exhausted right now.
I would think so. But Mother Nature's not going to give us a lot of help in the intervening 2 weeks.
Oh, that's not good. I understand you're a Bitcoin owner.
Oh, George. We had a show about this back in April.
Uh-huh.
We were banging around $1,100. And this, you know, the talk is that Bitcoin
15,400 plus now in the Asian market this morning.
Right. And everybody's talking about Bitcoin a bubble. No, Bitcoin is the pin that pops the bubble of the other markets. We're going to see an entirely new interest rate structure and ecosystem develop with the beginning of the CME and the CBOE futures exchanges.
It's amazing.
Sunday night, Monday.
It's amazing.
The paradigm in finance is about to dawn.
You got it. Scotty, thanks so much. And we'll keep our eyes on these fires out there. The Islamic group Hamas has urged Palestinians to abandon peace efforts and launch new uprisings against Israel in response to U.S. President Donald Trump's recognition of Jerusalem as its capital. An outbreak of war on the Korean Peninsula is an establishment fact, according to North Korea, issuing its most stark assessment of the current crisis that North Korea has felt. They say because of our interballistic missile that they launched and the ongoing military exercises between the United States and South Korea, that it is an established fact that there will be war. Let's check in with Charles R. Smith. He's been with us since the beginning of this situation. Charles, now even the Koreans are saying there could be a war.
Sorry. I was just reading about Sergey Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, meeting with Rex Tillerson, our Secretary of State in Vienna, where he relayed the message from the North Koreans that they want to talk.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
Tell me more.
Well, on Thursday, the two diplomats met in Vienna, and Sergey has relayed that he has met, well, at least Russian diplomats have met with their North Korean counterparts, and that for some assurances of security, the North Koreans would love to sit down directly with the United States in one-on-one talks for peace and security negotiations on the peninsula. Of course, this follows the visit of Jeffrey Feltman to the capital of North Korea, Pyongyang. He's representing the United Nations at the moment, but he's an ex-U.S. diplomat, and he has met directly with Ri Yong-ho, the foreign minister of North Korea. So despite the continuous war-banging drums and propaganda, as I pretty much predicted, we're now getting into that stage of let's talk.
Well, let's hope something works out there, Charlie. Nobody wants war. Thank you, Charles R. Smith. President Donald Trump chatted with World War II veterans at the White House as he signed a proclamation declaring it National Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day. Who could forget? On December 7th, 1941, as we were bombed by the Japanese. On December 8th, 1941, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt spoke to Congress.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory.
How amazing how time heals, as the Japanese now are some of our best friends out there. Just amazing story. You know, the stories we've been reporting on in our investigative reporter, Linda Moulton Howe, on these booms that are going on all around the planet. People are hearing these loud booms. Well, the U.S. Air Force has revealed a secret military mission around the Florida region, which was in May, of a supersonic flight test that caused some huge booms. Now, that doesn't explain what's going on around the planet, but it might explain what's going on there. They say the human race has peaked, with mankind reaching its maximum limits for height, lifespan, and physical performance, according to scientists, despite stories that each generation will live longer and longer. A new report suggests there may be a maximum threshold to our biological limits that we cannot exceed. Up next, it's called Zero Hour. Turn the greatest political and financial upheaval in modern history to your advantage. Harry Dent Jr. joins me next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Harry Dent Jr. back with us, founder of Dent Research, which publishes the newsletters Economy and Markets, Boom and Bust, and The Leading Edge, among many others. He has an MBA from Harvard, was a consultant for several Fortune 100 companies while at the Bain & Company, and lectures widely as well. His latest work with Andrew Panicioli is Zero Hour, which we're going to talk about and see what we can do just in case. Harry, welcome back.
Oh, it's so nice to be back, George.
I love it. What do you think of this Bitcoin craze, Harry?
You know what? I tell you, George, I compare it to the Internet. revolution. We had the big tech bubble from late 94 to early 2000, but in the last year and a half, the internet stocks roared up just like this and were the beginning of a major revolution, which is now paying off decades later. And I think the same thing of the Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. It's the late stage of this next technology revolution and bubble, but it's getting ready to collapse. I mean, the internet bubble collapsed 93% in less than 1 year. And I think this will happen at some point in this Bitcoin thing that could go to, I don't know, 17, 18, 19, 20,000 or more. But I think it is going to collapse. But it is the beginning of something that is the second stage of the internet revolution, which says, okay, now we have to take it from communication, email and Google and all this stuff, to transactions, financial and secure and efficient and faster. And I think that this cryptocurrency thing is a big new trend, but I think this is the first bubble burst in a multi-decade trend, and I think it is going to collapse very fast because you can't value this stuff yet. You know,
it's like scary.
The internet stocks, they had no earnings. They had growth and potential, but no earnings, and AOL was 400 times earnings. And stuff. We're at that stage again. So, again, I think I am totally into this long-term. I think short-term, we don't have too far to go before this collapses, but it's just going to be the first collapse in a long train.
I guess if you got in and you can get out, you're doing real well with Bitcoins, but it's kind of scary to think of it just sitting there. I mean, one of the Bitcoin currency companies got hacked a couple days ago, and they had to shut down. I mean, that's scary.
Yeah, and you know what? That is paradoxically, George, the reason that these cryptocurrencies could and blockchain technologies will succeed. They are more secure in the end, and they are potentially more efficient. Again, the internet did well for communication. Google, email, you know, quadrupled my company's productivity alone. But they don't do well for financial transactions because they can be hacked. So I think this is less hackable. But even here, there's an example where they kind of got hacked. So the whole thing in the internet is it cannot work broadband and broad-based in our economy if we cannot do financial transactions and feel good about it. And I have to have my credit card number changed every 3 months. This is not working.
That's crazy.
So I think this is good stuff. It's early stage, but I've got graphs that I put out in my latest newsletter that shows, hey, this is looking just like the internet stocks in the late stage of the tech bubble, which did do the best and grow like 1,000% in a year. It then crashed, but then now all these FANG stocks we have, Google, Amazon, they got birthed there. So I think this is the birth of something big, but I think investors should realize it's a little late to get into this bubble because it is really bubbling.
What's happening, Harry, with the stock market? My gosh, it just keeps going up, up, up. Is there a bubble there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, in my last book, The Sale of a Lifetime, in this new book, Zero Hour, we just show, look, everybody, you know, when I go on Wall Street or CNBC or Fox Business, everybody's like, oh, well, no, this really isn't a bubble because it's not as extreme as in 2000. I'm like, from 95 to 2000, our economy, and I was one of the few people that predicted this in advance, had the greatest boom and bubble in history. Productivity was at 3 to 4%. GDP growth was 3, 4, 5%.
Huge.
I mean, this was the best time since the Roaring Twenties, and even better. But it's not sustainable now. And for economists to say, oh well, stocks are very overvalued, but not as highly overvalued as in early 2000. This is comparing apples and oranges. The economy was twice as good back then, and stocks, when I adjust them for the difference in growth, are way more overvalued than they were in March of 2000 when the tech bubble burst 78% and internet stocks burst 93%. And I think we're just on the verge of both of those happening again. This is a bubble. Everything is bubbling. Real estate around the world, stocks, commodities already bubbled and burst. And when I used to say to people, oh, markets can go down 60, 70, 80, 90%. People said, oh, Harry, that's not possible in this world. Well, a lot of commodities are already down 60, 70, 80, 90%. You know, oil and iron ore and steel and even gold, which is supposed to save us in bad times, is down 40 to 50%, and silver 70%. We are in the greatest bubble burst in history. And it's about to hit real estate and stocks again. And people need to get out of the way of this. Just, you know, take your gains and run. You've gotten something for nothing in a bubble. And that's what bubbles are. When real estate grows three times the rate of inflation, and that's what real estate grows with, or three times the rate of inflation-adjusted stock returns, like 7%, you need to take your gains and run because you've gotten a free lunch.
Let's talk about tax reform. Of course, the House and the Senate now need to converge and work out the final deal. Is this going to be a good thing for us, Harry?
Okay. I would say no overall.
And, really?
And
how come?
Here's the reason. When Reagan came in the early 80s, we had gone through the greatest inflation surge in modern history, and inflation screams, oh, we don't have enough supply. You know, demand is exceeding supply. And that means you need to invest in more production and more innovation and things. And that's what Reagan's policies did. He kind of did the right thing at the right time, even though some people can criticize it in hindsight. But now we're in the opposite thing. We've had the greatest boom in history from 1983 to 2007, which I predicted way back decades ago, from the baby boom generation and their rising spending and earning and their rising productivity as a generation and information technologies, the greatest thing since the Industrial Revolution. And now we have overcapacity. Companies have 75% capacity utilization. China has overexpanded and has 27% empty condos in cities. Japan has 8 million empty homes as they're aging and there's not enough young people to move into the homes that older people are dying in. We're in a different world of deflation, slowing down demographics, which I study better than anybody in the world, and we don't need a tax cut. A tax cut is only going to give more cash flow back to companies that are using, number one, cheap money already for the last 8 or 9 years to buy back their own stocks. The net buyers of stocks have been corporations buying their own stocks, not individuals, not hedge funds, not institutions, companies buying their own stocks at cheap money with tax deductions to increase their earnings per share, even though they're not growing that much. You know, the economy's been growing at 2% when it used to grow at 3 to 4%, only on quantitative easing that makes home loans cheaper, car loans cheaper. It's a free lunch. We've been living on a free lunch since the baby boom stopped spending. And I'm saying this is not going to last. We're going to have to go through a reckoning of debt and slowing that we're just not willing to deal with. And we're going to have to go through it, and it's going to be nasty.
Let's go through Zero Hour, Harry, when we come back in just a moment and really get into some of the things people can do to survive this mess if and when it happens. Harry Dent's website, of course, that's his name, Harry Dent, DENT.com. His latest book is called Zero Hour, and we'll be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Harry Dent with us, his book, Zero Hour. Harry, the economy, would you say this year has been pretty robust?
It's been mildly robust, as it has been. It's really been 2% since 2009, when we went into the Great Recession, and the government said, we will not have a Great Depression, so we're just going to print $12 trillion of money, which happened around the world. And we've been growing at 2%, and I still think that's the trend. And the thing, George, that people don't get, like, we've just hired back all the people that got laid off in the 2008-09 recession. Our workforce, which I am an expert at projecting demographics, is not going to grow hardly ever for decades, and it's going to actually decline a bit with baby boomers retiring a bit faster than the millennials entering the workforce for the next few years. We don't have growth ahead. Growth is simply workforce growth plus productivity. And workforce growth is going to be flat to down for many, many years. And productivity has declined from 3% plus down to 0.5% as baby boomers are aging, because older people don't get more productive and younger people are having a harder time entering the workforce. And my projections, which good demographics are, say it's going to go to near zero. We're going to have near zero demographic growth and near zero productivity growth. And Trump is saying if we cut taxes, we're going to get 4, 5, 6% growth. I'm telling you, it ain't going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
His fault. It's just he's walked into something he does not expect.
Well, and let me ask you this. This partial robust economy this year, is that a President Obama economy or a President Trump economy?
Well, no, you know, it's just the same thing moving forward. I mean, the difference,
I mean, who gets credit
between me
for
and
it?
Most economists, I don't look at politicians as much. They react to change and growth. Fundamental factors, demographic growth, when people earn and spend more money, technology innovation, which comes in 45-year cycles, I've documented, and, you know, a lot of other things. That, those are the fundamentals that tell us when we're going to grow or not. And politicians just react. If we have too much inflation, they raise interest rates. If growth slows, they reduce interest rates. They just react. You can't look at the government policies, and you can't even look at this year's growth and say that's the future, because in 1989, Japan looked like they were going to take over the world, and then they collapsed.
Yeah,
we predicted that.
And China zoomed, and then they could go down the tubes.
Well, and today, people, you know, economists are saying, oh, China's going to take over the United States. No, maybe eventually, but not in the next 10 years. China has so overexpanded, overbuilt. They're going to have the greatest bubble burst in history.
Oh, gosh.
They have the most overvalued real estate markets, most overvalued stock markets. China's going to go down for a long time. The U.S. is still going to be the leading country, the best house in a bad neighborhood, even as we go through a difficult period, because we have less stimulus. We have better demographics than these other countries.
You have talked about in your work a social revolution that will rival democracy itself, and you say there are three major cycles that are all hitting at the same time. What's going on here?
Yeah, George, I've talked about this for years, but I have not emphasized it as much until I saw it with Brexit and Trump and everything else. There's a 250-year cycle which goes back to the American Revolution, democracy. And it wasn't just democracy. It was Adam Smith with free market capitalism explained for the first time in history the invisible hand that grows from the bottoms up. This was the greatest thing. Harry met Sally. Two opposite principles. Capitalism that rewards merit and innovation, and democracy that includes everybody anyway. It was the greatest thing in history. our stock markets and economy in the Western countries have gone up so much since then, I can't even put it on a logarithmic graph, you know, which adjusts for exponentiality. It was the greatest revolution in history. Now we're coming on what I say is the second one. Information technologies takes democracy bottoms up and capitalism even deeper. And they've both been eclipsed because, you know, the central banks have taken over free markets, and special interests with highly specialized, you know, money and stuff have taken over democracy. This is going to be another revolution that takes what started to happen in the Protestant Revolution two 250-year cycles ago, where the Catholic Church was finally dethroned from its all-encompassing, you know, dominance to democracy and free market capitalism. And now I'm telling people, companies, governments can grow from the bottoms up. No top down. Anything top down like this central bank, you know, stimulus and stuff is ever going to succeed again. Bottoms up, people are going to win. And our study of demographics and technology shows that people drive our economy, not governments.
Is this going to be a dramatic change for all of us?
Oh, I'm telling you, it's so dramatic from what I can see from studying history. We've already seen dramatic gains in the last, you know, since World War II and even back to the late 1700s. We are seeing real challenges. Globalization is peaking for the second time recently. The first one was coming into World War I and a great setback, and this is the second one. My whole expertise is I understand cycles. People don't like cycles because they go up and down. I accept the up and down. And we've had globalization go up and down. Globalization is peaking. This Donald Trump, you know, America first and Brexit and stuff is the beginning of something that's going to take a few decades to settle out on this cycle. But it's going to come out the other side better. I can already predict a third globalization cycle that'll make this look like nothing, but it's going to take many decades. And all I tell people is, look, I can't promise you that everything's going to be always okay. I can just tell you when things are going to be in your favor and not.
And react to
demographics have peaked for a long time in the developed world, but they're going to grow in the emerging world, and commodity cycles are collapsing, and they're going to turn around the first. There's many things you can predict if you just look at simple cycles, and that's what I do.
Well, when you think of this as a reset for all of us, how do we reset something that's come out of a mess, assuming that's what happens?
Well, that's what resets are about. When you go, any boom in anything goes to extremes, and people overinvest and get overconfident, and then it has to go through a detox and go to the other side. And that's when the smartest investors make money. Downturns happen twice as fast as upturns. And in the downturns, you get the greatest investment opportunities, like 1974 when Warren Buffett started his fund. I hate to say it, Warren Buffett's a smart investor, but he primarily got favored by starting his fund at the right time. I mean, you could have been a monkey throwing darts and done half as good as he did and made a bunch of money because he started his fund at the bottom of stock prices in late 74. And before that, if you had invested at the bottom of the Great Depression in 1932 in stocks and 33 in real estate, oh my God, you could have done no wrong. So I'm into the timing business. And again, I'm agnostic. I don't like booms or busts. They both happen. If a boom's happening, oh, okay, do this. If a bust is happening, do this. If there's inflation like the 1970s, then buy gold and silver and commodities and real estate. But if you're in a deflationary downturn like the 1930s or what I see is now, you buy safe assets. And the leading,
well, what are safe assets?
Like the dollar, right? And then you rebuy when everything goes down.
But Harry, what are safe assets nowadays?
Okay, right now, U.S. dollar. Now, you don't buy a dollar bill; you buy the UUP at worst, or a dollar bullish fund, which bets on the dollar versus other currencies. You're not buying a dollar. You're buying the dollar versus other currency because we're the best house in a bad neighborhood.
Right.
Yes, we've been stimulating. We've been printing money, but we haven't been printing as much money as Europe and nowhere near as much as Japan. And China is the greatest bubble machine in history, and it's going to go down faster. We're the best house in a bad neighborhood. That's the first thing you do now. Now, as a crisis sets in, we may see countries like Italy start to default and Germany start to have some problems.
Is that when you know the crisis has started, when you see those signs?
Yeah. The best sign is that bubbles get out of control. And on this Bitcoin bubble is a harbinger of something real in the coming decades, but it's getting extreme, and that to me is a sign that this bubble broader.
But not a lot of people are into Bitcoin, so they're not going to all get hurt like you would in the housing market or
something.
Well,
I hate to say it, George, it's everyday people buying Bitcoin more than the hedge funds and stuff, and that's what I hate to see. They're the people that jump in at the end.
But
would the internet stock?
What would you say? 100,000 people are in bitcoins. 1 million. What do you think?
Oh, I tell you, it's a lot. I mean, everybody. You know, I talk to my stepson. I talk to his friends. I talk to these. A lot of people are buying Bitcoin and Ethereum and stuff, and they've made money. But when it goes, it's not going to go 10% or 20% or 30% or 40%. It's going to go 90%.
Boom. It's going to be huge.
Just like the internet stocks did. But again, George, when the internet stocks finally burst in 2001, in 1 year, 93%, they launched a whole new revolution, which is now paying off in all these FANG stocks. So you have to understand how technologies and demographics and cycles adjust. And this is too late to get into the Bitcoin thing. It is.
It's too high now, isn't it?
It's too high. It may go 20-30% higher.
Right.
I would give 20,000 as a upper limit on Bitcoin. But when I compare it to the internet bubble, which, again, the tech bubble took 5.5 years. The internet bubble was just the last year and a half, and it did as much as the whole tech bubble over 5 years. This is what Bitcoin is doing. I think Bitcoin is the last thing, and it has gained more in the last year than the whole tech bubble,
then it's whole,
number two.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's saying it's near the end. Can I tell when it's going to end? No, but I'm telling you, it's too late to get in this bubble, because when it goes down, it's not going to be.
When were you first aware of Bitcoin, and did you contemplate getting in?
No, I didn't, because I wasn't studying this. I moved to Puerto Rico a year and a half ago, and I met Michael Turpin, which is one of the Bitcoin cryptocurrency experts in the world. In fact, I can't even, every time I want to go dinner with him, he's traveling to Spain or Hong Kong or somewhere to speak on this. This is a hot thing. But I wasn't aware of it until then. But when I did see how fast it was accelerating, I said, well, I always look in history, what can I compare this to? It's like, it's just like the internet bubble. There was a tech bubble from 94 to 2000, but there was an internet bubble that was just a little over a year that was just like this Bitcoin bubble. And then it crashed 93% in less than a year. And that's, I'm telling people, look, hey, if you got into Bitcoin at 1,000 or 2,000, yeah, God bless you. But if you're going to buy it at 14,000 or 17,000, you're an idiot.
I wonder what it came out at, like cents, pennies?
No, that's what happens. These bubbles burst. The more extreme, the internet bubble went down 93% in 1 year. The NASDAQ bubble back then went down 78%.
Like a free fall almost.
The Dow bubble with General Motors and Ford and General Electric in 1929 went down 89% in 2.5 years. And George, here's the worst thing that I warn people of. When these bubbles finally burst, yeah, it may take 2 to 3 years to go down 70, 80, 90%, but half of the crash happens in the first 2 to 3 months. I've got a chart, you know, in my book and in my newsletter that shows that all the great stock bubbles back to 1900, including Japan and the Dow and the Shanghai and the NASDAQ and then the biotech and the internet, the first 2 to 3 months see half of the crash. So if you stay in these bubbles and say, well, you can't lose, you get killed right off the bat. So Baron Rothschild.
Hold on for a second, Harry. You're already at the top of the hour. We'll come back. We'll talk more about your work, Zero Hour. And we'll open up the phone lines because everybody wants to ask you a question.